Hello and welcome to The Stooshie, the Scottish politics podcast from DC Thompson that helps you be better briefed. I'm Andy Phillip, and on this episode I'm joined by Adele Merson and Justin Bowie for the very obvious reason that we need to talk about Humza Yousaf's resignation and the future of the SNP. It's not just a talking shop here on The Stooshie though. We've been out on the streets to get the view of the people. I say we, but I mean Justin, who was testing the reaction in Dundee, the city in which Humza Yousaf lives with his family. For people who have been doing something else for the past week, here is my quick rundown of what has just happened. Scotland, until Thursday, was run by a sort of coalition between the SNP and the Greens, a small party in the Scottish Parliament, but on the same page with the SNP on independence, and until recently, it seemed more than that. Their deal, struck originally by Nicola Sturgeon, gave two Greens ministerial positions alongside the SNP in the government. It's not been going too smoothly, though, for a number of reasons which we will get into a little later. Then, on Thursday, the First Minister of Scotland asked his two Green MSPs for a chat, and then fired them, ending the Bute House agreement altogether. Then he told everyone that he had just displayed leadership, and promptly set about his day, feeling like he'd reset the whole thing. But within about 4 seconds of the press conference at his official residence, it was quite clear the Greens were not going to put up with such a public humiliation. Patrick Harvey and Lorna Slater said Humza had blown it and would no longer have their support to get stuff done in Parliament. Then Scottish Conservative leader Douglas Ross piped up to say he had no confidence in the First Minister, and it all fell apart very quickly after that. On Sunday, April 28th, it was clear to everyone here that it was over. And on Monday, we were all invited back to Bute House, the official residence in Edinburgh, where I sat in the front row to hear a tearful Humza Yousaf say it turns out he can't govern as a minority party leader anymore. In short, a massive miscalculation and a total disaster. And now we're in a leadership contest 1 year since the last one. Quickly, it looked like John Swinney will be pushed to the front, but Kate Forbes was in the wings, mulling it over as well. And even if that changes in the days since we record this, there are still massive problems to discuss. First up, a quick word from the man himself. Here's what the First Minister had to say.
For a minority government to be able to govern effectively and efficiently, trust when working with the opposition is clearly fundamental. And while a route through this week's motion of no confidence was absolutely possible, I am not willing to trade my values and principles or do deals with whomever simply for retaining power. Therefore, after spending the weekend reflecting on what is best for my party, for the government, and for the country I lead, I've concluded that repairing our relationship across the political divide can only be done with someone else at the helm. I have therefore informed the SNP's National Secretary of my intention to stand down as party leader and ask that she commences a leadership contest for my replacement as soon as possible.
Justin, you are privileged to have more youth on your side than I do. Is this the biggest political miscalculation you have ever seen in your time as a journalist?
We certainly rank right up there. I mean, we've seen some pretty bad miscalculations in recent years, haven't we? Between, you know, people like Liz Truss and Boris Johnson. So we're no strangers in the UK to politicians making daft decisions, but this does have to be one of the worst. I mean, the First Minister was depending on the Greens to govern, as you said at the start, and he essentially blew up that relationship, which had been working for years, even before the two parties formally made the Bute House agreement. They'd obviously been working in informal arrangements in Parliament for years. It wasn't always solid, you know, there was obviously areas of disagreement, but it did seem to be functioning, and it's one of those things that is worth bearing in mind that there were a lot of people arguing the First Minister should tear up the agreement, including plenty of people within his own party. The agreement was obviously seen as a bit of a liability in some respects, but it's become clear now that the parliamentary arithmetic was just not there for Humza Yousaf to ditch this without having an alternative. And ultimately, it was his job as First Minister to be able to look at that and think, well, if I need the Greens, I need to find a way to keep them on side. And I think the way that he ditched them so suddenly, it was essentially overnight almost. I mean, last Tuesday, he was still defending the Bute House agreement. So the way he ditched them so suddenly, he perhaps didn't anticipate the level of anger there would be from the Greens, but he really should have anticipated that. I mean, you cannot ditch a party from government and expect them to take that well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Liz Truss there. You really think this kind of... I mean, she was, I think, as far as I'm concerned, she's the benchmark for completely wild decision-making. Do you think Humza Yousaf has blown it in a sort of similar size of a misstep.
It's a bit different in some ways, because I guess that Liz Truss's miscalculations were more economic than, you know, political in some senses. She, for lack of a better word, essentially blew up the economy, and that just made her untenable as party leader. And her party realised they had to get rid of her because of that. The slight difference with Humza Yousaf is that he didn't need to do this. This was kind of his own making. I mean, what Liz Truss did was of her own making, but the aftermath, she didn't necessarily have that much control over, which was why she had to go. But if Humza Yousaf had not got rid of this, like, you know, agreement, he would have had problems. The Greens were, of course, going to vote on the Bute House agreement themselves. But, you know, he wouldn't have been ousted as First Minister, so it very much is of his own making, which perhaps makes it different to Liz Truss in some senses. He didn't need to do this, but he has, and as a consequence, he's leaving the job.
Yeah, one thing Humza Yousaf has in common with every other political leader is it's not all one way behind him. Factions emerged pretty quickly in the background, as they did last year. Adele, I don't suppose it really even matters if in the weeks and months ahead, John Swinney's in charge or Kate Forbes has been put in power. Tell us about the factions going on in the background, because that is something that whoever leads the SNP is going to have to worry about down the line.
Yeah, it does feel like the gloves are off already, and we haven't even figured out who the official, you know, nobody's officially declared yet. So it's very reminiscent, as you say, to last year, similar sort of kind of divides. So I spoke with Fergus Ewan. He was telling me that he believes the SNP, in the way that they've sort of very quickly lined up behind John Swinney, are kind of acting in a way that shows they're still beholden to the Greens, that he's perhaps, well, no, we know he is more palatable to them than, say, Kate Forbes would be. So he was not best pleased about that. And today, I think we've also had SNP MSP Ivan McKee. He was in the Record, you know, comparing John Swinney to Humza Yousaf and saying, we all know how well that turned out last time, and sort of comparing that kind of continuity idea, going with that continuity candidate didn't work out well for them, and that it might feel familiar and safe, but that this time round they really need to have more of a, I guess, a reset and go for somebody less so closely aligned to, say, Nicola Sturgeon's leadership. But yeah, it does seem to be dividing into basically most of the kind of high profile figures, such as SNP Westminster leader Stephen Flynn, and not the entire cabinet. I think, you know, much of the cabinet haven't said anything yet, but quite a few cabinet secretaries as well have backed John Swinney. And then you've kind of got what's perhaps seen as the similar camp to last time, you know, Fergus Ewan, his sister Annabelle, Joanna Cherry, I think, has had problems as well with the way things are going towards John Swinney.
Yeah, and Fergus, of course, he likes a big soundbite, and he was saying that where the Greens were calling the shots, in his view, when they were in coalition, he was saying to you again yesterday that the green tail continues to wag the big yellow dog, which is quite the image there. It's interesting to hear how the Greens are still the party in the thick of it, even now. I caught up with North East Green MSP Maggie Chapman just the day before we recorded this to find out what her party thinks as they check in with their membership to plot a new course. I also asked her if she still has confidence in her own party co-leaders, Patrick Harvey and Lorna Slater. Listen carefully to the words that she isn't saying at the end of this clip.
There are ongoing discussions in the party just about what has happened, where that leads us, and how we move forward as a party of opposition. I think, you know, that our executive meets tomorrow evening, and they will sort of indicate some options for the next few weeks around internal party discussions. But from, you know, small interest groups to branches to national party councils and execs, There are ongoing discussions, as you would expect, given the change in their arrangement, in the change in how we work with the Scottish Government.
Are you confident with Patrick and Lorna to remain as co-leaders of the group?
As I've said, our party is a party of democracy. Both Patrick and Lorna were elected by our party members to be co-leaders of the party, and until they are defeated or they stand down, they remain our party leaders. Of course they do.
Okay. So I think we can pause there and return again to the Greens, because the focus has been entirely on the SNP leadership. But I think what Maggie isn't saying there is, yes, I am entirely happy with my party's co-leadership at the moment. It'd be very interesting to see what happens next. But if an MSP like Maggie is not really willing to say something that's backing up her own leadership there, others will be thinking that as well. Moving on to some more predictions and what happens next. But you don't want to hear all of that from us. What you want to hear about is what people on the ground are saying. Justin, you were in Dundee the day before we recorded this to hear from those very people who share a council boundary with the outgoing First Minister. What has the reaction been like on the streets?
Well, yeah, I spoke to people in Dundee yesterday and it was fair to say there was a bit of a consensus that the First Minister was probably right to go, obviously from his detractors, people who were not fans and who were delighted to see him resign, although some of them, of course, acknowledged that, you know, they're not going to be happy with his replacement necessarily either. But even some of the people who supported him kind of admitted that he seemed to have come to the end of the road. He had found himself in difficult circumstances. He was perhaps somewhat limited in what he could do going forward. So, yeah, opinions on him as a leader and as a First Minister were mixed. You know, one person I spoke to, for example, a former Tory councillor in the city of Dundee, was actually quite complimentary of him in some senses, said he did the best he could given the circumstances. And it's always important to note when you're speaking to people on the streets as well, it's not necessarily a major topic for a lot of people at the moment. Some people didn't know that he'd resigned. Some people were asking about what exactly had happened. So for some people, it's a bit of a non-issue. And at the same time, you know, there was also people bringing up other topics that concern them at the moment. Things like, you know, the NHS, the cost of living, the ferries crisis came up, people talking about the state of Dundee. So it's interesting that while we talk about, you know, these political machinations and we look at what happens next and the SNP continue to talk about independence, for some people the frustration wasn't about that. For some people the frustration is, you know, the general state of the country. So I think that's quite interesting as well. But yeah, certainly not, there were few ringing endorsements of Hamza Yousaf on the streets of Dundee for sure.
Okay, well let's hear some of those reactions now.
So what do you think of the First Minister's resignation then, Helen?
I just don't feel terribly sad for him because I felt that he was doing really quite a good job for the country. And then I just always feel that people are manoeuvred out of politics. It's the nature of politics.
Sure. Do you have any preferences for who you would want to replace him now?
I would like to see John Swinney again because John Swinney was our First Minister, I think, a way back many years ago. And it was almost as though he didn't get a long enough short answer.
He was SNP leader, not First Minister. He was in opposition, but he was the leader.
Right, okay, he was the leader so many years ago, and I just thought it would be nice for him to get a shot at it.
Sure.
Yes.
Well, what about Kay Forbes? She's the other candidate. Do you have any views on her?
I wonder if she's perhaps a little too discompassionate in her thinking sometimes. I know that she's a Christian and things, but I feel sometimes that perhaps it's a little too right-wing, some of her views.
So
you know.
If you were to give Hamza a scorecard out of 10 for his performance as First Minister, with 10 being the highest, what would you give him?
I would have given him 7. Yes.
Sure, so you think he's performed well overall?
Yes, I think overall, he wasn't a Nicola, but I think he performed quite well in his circumstances.
What are your thoughts, George, on the First Minister's resignation?
Well, I think it's the best thing that's ever happened to Scotland because he's had that many failures in other positions, the same as Shona Robertson. She should be resigning as well. And SNP should now be finished altogether.
And do you think this will lead to that? I mean, that's another First Minister gone, second in 2 years. So do you think this will kind of hasten her demise in some senses?
Well, I think she'd come to a general election for the public and let them decide, not change leaders when they feel like changing leaders.
Yeah.
It should be the public that dictates, yeah. not the politicians.
Sure. And the two names that have been floated as possible replacements are John Swinney and Kay Forbes. Would you like either of them or would it just be more of the same?
It would just be more of the same. John Swinney retired. He couldn't get any positions. So what do you want to come back for? To make another mess of the SNP and make a mess of Scotland and make a mess of Dundee, like this town is just a disgrace. Never in my 77 years have I experienced a mess of this town.
And do you think the SNP have the eye off the ball in terms of priorities then?
They don't have any priorities. They have no idea. They know nothing at all. Nothing.
And if you were to give the First Minister a scorecard out of 10 for his performance in the past year, with 10 being the highest, what would you give him?
I'd give him a 0.
A 0, so yeah. Terrible in all senses.
Yes, all and everything. He's failed in everything. Failed.
Janice, and what are your thoughts on the resignation of the First Minister then, Janice?
I'm sorry he's gone. I think he did a good job in a difficult situation. But in the end, I don't think he could have stayed. I didn't want him to do a deal with Ash Reagan, and so that's it.
Are you an SNP supporter yourself?
Yes.
You are. So who would you prefer replaces him now? The two options being voted are John Swinney and Kate Forbes. What are your preferences there?
John Swinney or maybe Jenny Golliffe.
So Jenny Golliffe appears to have backed John Swinney, though.
Yeah, I know. Wish you... Well, no, I mean, you can't not back John. He's good.
You like him then. So yeah. What would you give Hums out of 10 then? You know, as a scorecard for his performance as First Minister in the year or so, if 10's the highest, what would you say he's, you know, got out of that?
I'd probably have given about a 7 or 8 until, or 8 or 9 till last week. I wish he just hadn't fallen out with the Greens.
Yes, and what do you think he did well then?
I think he held things together very well in an incredibly difficult time. He was good on Gaza. He kind of gave the vision of Scotland that I wouldn't mind living in.
Adele, some mixed views there, it's fair to say. Some interesting opinions, and quite mixed too. From zero to hero, I think, is kind of where we were there. How would you characterise Hums's year in power? It's a big question, I think. You know, there's a lot to take in there, but just sort of a sitting back overview. It was just 1 year, bookended by trouble.
That's the main kind of, I guess, thing that comes to mind, is just how much he had to put up with, you know, that I guess wasn't within his control in some senses. So I think someone touched on it there, that I guess he's shown he's pretty resilient and that he had to put up with a hell of a lot. But yeah, it just feels like it was over before it really began. He didn't really get to set out much of a vision, but I guess some people would argue, did he have much of a vision, or was he just kind of a continuation of what went before? I think it's right to say most people would say they agree that he looked quite statesmanlike around things like Gaza and being one of the few Western leaders to kind of speak up about that, but also engaging with the Jewish community in Scotland as well. I think closer to home, he did manage to perhaps reset things a little bit in the Northeast, for example. That's just my perception, or he was beginning to, certainly. Don't know how much of that was a kind of election consideration, because let's be honest, the Northeast is where they could sort of hold on to quite a few seats. It's kind of a straight race between SNP and Tories rather than bringing in Labour. So there was perhaps, you know, calculations there, but it did feel, certainly compared to Nicola Sturgeon, things were perhaps a bit warmer towards the oil and gas industry and realising the importance of that to the economy here. But I guess it didn't feel, a lot of the time it didn't feel he was really a man in command of events. This is both his, I guess, the positive I've heard from kind of activists, is that they felt he was perhaps actually engaged more with that side, you know, engaged more with the wider movement. And I guess he was less controlled and had that tight group that Nicola Sturgeon had. But by the same token, I think that also was his downfall, because he didn't have that discipline that Nicola Sturgeon had behind her. And it just felt like events kind of happened to him rather than he was on the front foot. I mean, and then we saw things, you know, like he managed to anger a lot of people around his council tax decision and not consulting people. And it sometimes felt like there were just some rash decisions made without really thinking through the consequences.
We published an exhaustive month-by-month account of Hums Yousaf's time in office, which I would encourage anyone who's interested to go back and read on the Courier or the P&J online and in print from the day of his resignation, because it really does just distill how many of those events that were kind of outside his control. Justin, when do you think it all went wrong? Or was it wrong the minute he inherited it and suddenly the SNP's in that policing, there's a financial probe, that's just one thing after another?
Well, yeah, when you look at this long timeline that we wrote of everything that's happened, I mean, pretty much the first thing that happened was, of course, the first arrest of former SNP party chief Peter Murrell. He, of course, has, you know, now been charged in relation to that probe. And it kind of shows, I mean, I suppose that bookends it on either side. He was, of course, released the first time and then, you know, later rearrested. But when you're a week into the job and the first thing that happens is your predecessor's husband is being arrested, it's not an easy start, is it? And then, of course, he had a difficult year in terms of managing the party. You know, Western Isles MP Angus McNeil was expelled from the party. Fergus Ewing was, of course, suspended. You have Lisa Cameron defecting to the Tories, Ash Regan defecting to ALBA. So that was the difficulties in terms of party management, which, of course, relates to the struggle with the Greens. And you then just have the everyday problems which didn't go away. You know, NHS, ferries, education. There's just such a long list of problems that he continually faced. And when you look through it month by month, there isn't really a month where there was a let up. Of course, there was also the personal difficulties he had in terms of his family being stuck in Gaza. Of course, they were thankfully able to escape and get home to Dundee. But that obviously took a massive toll on the First Minister around the time of the SNP conference in Aberdeen. So you just kind of have all these different fronts, you know, personal, political, economic. Just, it was an extraordinarily difficult year for Hamza Yousaf, and some of it perhaps was of his own making in terms of how he managed the SNP and in terms of political decisions that were made, not only by him, but by his predecessor, who, of course, he was a strong supporter of. And there may be an argument, you know, the First Minister is still quite young. He was obviously quite politically experienced, but maybe he made a mistake by going for the job at the time he did. I mean, it seems like a bit of a poison chalice right now. And of course, it's been suggested that maybe that's one of the reasons the party wants to put somebody like John Swinney in charge. It's not an easy job right now, and in some senses it's perhaps better to have an experienced head who is not going to be in politics in 15, 20 years' time, as opposed to somebody who's a bit earlier in the career. So, yeah, not an easy year, and I would recommend that piece to show just how difficult it's been.
Well, having looked in the rearview mirror, maybe it's time for some predictions of our own. Whoever wins the SNP leadership contest, are we heading to an election in 2026 as planned, or will it come earlier? I would encourage among the team, this is a bit of a pop quiz here, I'm afraid. I would encourage as precise predictions as you can, just so that we can go back at the end of the year and award points to ourselves to determine who has the best powers of foresight here. I will start, having come up with this horrible idea on the hoof here. So I think you'll probably all say the same thing at this bit here. But Swinney, he decides, I've got no choice. Even though he said he's been actively trying to leave government since 2016, when Sturgeon left, he'll go back in because he's a party man. He'll get the party behind him. Kate will be on board. I don't know if she'll go back into government. She might, but she may well try to stay on the back benches, but they'll have a coming together, make things better. They'll go to the election, the SNP fall back. Maybe John Swinney at that point says, you know what, it becomes inevitable and we move towards a Scottish election and a new leader is elected to take the election, and then that's where it happens before 2026. That's my thing. I think it will come early. Adele, what do you reckon?
Sound like I'm copying, but quite similar. I think John Swinney will, I think he'll narrowly beat Kate Forbes. I think it might be quite similar to last. I
think there will be a contest.
Yes. Oof. For the entire party apparatus will get behind him, so he'll narrowly win, but there'll still be some discontent there. I think it will work out quite similar to last time with Hamza Yousaf, but I think he might limp on to the election. And then I think there could be a sort of new leader around then, perhaps Stephen Flynn, Aberdeen South MP.
Goodness me. All right. Big predictions. Justin?
I'm going to slightly disagree in that. I mean, this could age badly in terms of the time this podcast is released. I'm going to say that there will not be a contest. John Swinney will become First Minister. I think Kate Forbes will end up perhaps as Deputy First Minister and in the role of Finance Secretary again as well. I just don't think it's in the interest of the party to have that debate. I think Kate Forbes clearly wants to be First Minister. She ran last year, but I think John Swinney would probably beat her. I don't know if the optics are good if she loses another leadership contest, but at the same time, again, like Hamza, Kate Forbes is young. I don't know if she would necessarily benefit from having that poison chalice right now. I think the SNP will struggle in the UK general election, but I think John Swinney, if he's First Minister, by then will stay in post. I think that if they manage to keep more seats in Labour, I mean, they're clearly going to lose seats, but if they manage to have more seats in Labour, they'll try and portray that as a victory. And I think that Swinney might then kind of manage on to 2026, but I don't see him being leader beyond that. And like Adele, I would expect perhaps Stephen Flynn then, if not Kate Forbes, in 2026.
Oh, there you have it. Okay, well, we will bookmark this. That's all we have time for on this episode of The Stooshie, which I am happy to add here has been shortlisted again at the Scottish Press Awards for Podcast of the Year. Loyal fans will remember we won it 2 years ago, but then were cruelly snubbed the year after. Until next time, thanks to producer Caroline White and to you for listening.
Keep up to date with the latest political news and features by subscribing to the Press and Journal and the Courier so you can be better briefed.